Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Happy Tuesday. Welcome in, everybody. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank Field. Jaguars Today, 1010 XL 92.5 FM, 57 minutes from now, Tony, because everything always goes off precisely in Conville. We will have the State of the Jaguars address taking place right, just not quite directly above our heads, but
close enough
down the hall a little bit in one of the conference areas. What is that area even called over there? It's the West Club. Is that the West Club area?
I guess so, yeah.
All right, I'll go with that.
It's where we eat lunch.
That's right. It's the lunch line. It's the buffet line. And a fine selection of deli meats and cheeses have been made available. The only thing that would be better if they brought dandy sandwiches in on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. See me? See how I just brought that all around full circle? It is State of the Jags address today, Shad Khan and Mark Lamping. We will certainly get to that. Fan feedback spotlight today is one that's kind of on delay. We like your reaction to what you hear today from Shad Khan and Mark Lamping. I have a feeling, Tony, if it goes, I'm trying to recall back to last year how it went. I believe Shad Khan just spoke for a couple minutes, some introductory words, and gave way to Mark Lamping, who really took over for the meat of the presentation. The president of the Jacksonville Jaguars. They've got representatives from U.S. Assure, the insurance group, which is going to be the naming rights sponsor for the club seating area as well. They'll be on hand, so you'll hear some more about some of the business partnerships that Shad Khan's crew has been developing for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So that will take place, and as we mentioned yesterday, if you're listening to the program, that they'll break off into separate kind of media availabilities. You'll have the broadcast media, TV and radio, with Shad Khan, say, and then the print guys will be with Mark Lamping, and then we'll switch it up. But we won't air that portion because they won't be at a podium. They won't be, you know, you'll hear some of that sound coming up later on this afternoon on 1010 XL for sure. But what I plan to do is go upstairs, listen in, see if I can glean a few details, and then rejoin you right after the State of the Jags press conference. So for folks who want to weigh in on the fan feedback spotlight, just wait. And we'll get to your reaction at the end of the show as well as tomorrow. We'll carry this into tomorrow, obviously, because this is we don't know how long it's going to go. We're planning on going maybe a half an hour with it. It may go 10 minutes, you know, as far as what's interesting and whether they make the presentation and things trail off. It all depends on how long they decide to go, what kind of content they're putting out there. But we'll stay with it as long as we possibly can this morning and bring you that and give you a chance to react and see if you're hearing what you want to hear. A lot of people do want to hear about the shipyards, as we found out yesterday. That's no surprise what's going to happen with the development of that area. I heard Dan talking about that this morning, Tony. It could be a two-year environmental cleanup job before they can even go to work. But I have no problem. You know what? Let's have some long-range vision. And I think Shad Khan clearly is a man with vision when it comes to business. But I almost like the idea more of, you know what, there's a project that's going to take 5 years to complete, whatever, you know, because it just shows a time investment. You know what I mean? And it's if it's something you could pop up overnight, look, I don't think the practice bubble would take all that long to construct. They could do it in an off season, but you've got to get that area up to specs, I guess. I'm just basing it on what Dan said this morning. That kind of stuff, way over my head. So we'll find out, I think, a little bit on all those scores today, what the plans are, what the timetable is.
Yeah, and my guess is that it's going to be a piece-by-piece thing. I think that there may be a long-term plan for what they want to do with that area, but it may be a plan that is going to take 4 or 5 years to happen because of whatever cleanup they need to do to make that happen. I think that you can clean up, all right, we're going to clean up this area so we can put in a practice facility. And I think you may be able to get that kind of thing done in about a year, right?
Maybe.
If you're saying we're going to clean up this area for that,
right,
and then we're going to move to something else, as opposed to let's clean up the whole area so we can do everything at the same time. It makes more sense to me, at least, that we're going to, all right, if we want to put the practice facility right here, then let's do it. And let's have a realistic timetable for that. And we'll see. Again, those plans, at least to some degree, are going to be shown today here in the next hour or so.
Yes. How was the show last night?
It was fun.
Paul Spicer in last night?
No Spicer last night.
No
actually
Spice.
Did the show with Denny Thompson.
How close is Spice to getting an NFL coaching job?
I don't know.
Are the irons in the fire?
But him not being there last night's probably at least a good sign for him interviewing somewhere.
Oh, good.
for a job on some staff. So.
Good for Spice. Of course, Fat Tuesday tonight as well.
And it's actually Fat Tuesday.
It is Fat Tuesday, yeah. Which is kind of crazy, isn't it? What is Fat Tuesday, by the way?
It's some Mardi Gras thing.
I know it's a Oh, wow.
That's all I know about it.
All right. It's some American tradition, right? Because it's a tradition in part of America. I'm sure a quick Google search would explain. Could it be, this has something to do with Lent, right? So is this maybe the last day where you fatten up on everything before you give up all those things you give up for Lent?
Maybe.
Correct. It says it's the last night of eating richer, fatty foods before the ritual of fasting.
Who is a deducer?
You are so wise.
Right there, Tony. I broke that down with some context clues and just threw it right out in your face, and bam, that just happened. So also tonight, Helmets and Heels.
Mm-hmm.
And, Tony, I've been trying to book this guest for quite a while now. The schedule is very difficult to get the availability, but I have the star of Helmets and Heels joining us at the bottom of the hour, Ms. Lauren Brooks,
mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen. It's oft rumored that she was back in Jacksonville taking a hiatus from her new duties as the head groundskeeper at Augusta National. We congratulate her on that new position. Of course, she's in every Tuesday for Helmets and Heels, but Lauren's going to stop by and go to the press conference with us a little bit later on today. I don't know how I missed this one. Always scanning the web for Jaguar-related content, obviously, for the program. And ESPN did a story. I guess they did it Friday. That's probably why I missed it. It probably was posted after we went off the air. And over the course of the weekend, it just got shuffled down the line on bold moves that every team in the AFC South needs to do.
Yeah.
It's a good story for comic relief. And we'll get into it coming up here in a minute, but it really highlights why you shouldn't pay that much attention to anything that anyone says.
Didn't we just talk about that yesterday?
Just outside of this local area of people who cover the team and actually know what's going on. I'm not talking about just us. There are plenty of people in the local media who have a clue as to what's going on with the franchise. But, man, step outside the boundaries of the 904 area code, and people will just throw stuff out there that is just patently false, not even opinion false, just bad reporting. And we'll get to that coming up and why I think just another instance of why you shouldn't take things so seriously from the national media. That coming up, Doug Baldwin apologizes for fake pooping in the end zone
mm-hmm.
during the Super Bowl. We'll get to that. Ryan Mallett maybe have the inside track to be the Texans' starting quarterback according to the team's official website. Only problem with that is he's not on the roster as soon as the league year starts. He'll be a free agent, so they got to re-sign him. But maybe that's the inclination of the direction they're going to go. So we'll touch on all that. If you want to get in today, 641-1010 is the number. If you want to talk about what you expect from the state of the franchise, you're certainly welcome to do that. But as far as the fan feedback spotlight, hold your Jets at least until you hear the first portion of the broadcast today that we'll bring to you on 1010XL coming up at 11 o'clock, and just give us your reaction to what you're hearing. What did you like? What didn't you like? Whatever the score is it a bunch of lip service? Are you more excited than ever? Is it the same old, same old? You tell us what you think. We'll get to some of that reaction at the end of the show. You can tweet at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler. Take a quick time out. Come back. Phone lines open to you. We'll get into that bold moves for the AFC South story. I think you'll get a good laugh out of that as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Knew I should have moved to Amsterdam, Tony, for a variety of reasons. What do they pay them to keep Amsterdam clean these days?
I follow that Uber Facts,
of course you do,
deal on Twitter, and I have no idea if this stuff is factual or not, but because I don't check any of it.
It happens on the internet.
But I certainly am entertained by it. And the last one they just tweeted out was Amsterdam pays alcoholics in beer to clean the streets. 5 cans of beer for a day's work plus 10 pounds as in payment and tobacco.
All right. Not 10 pounds of tobacco, but 10 pounds worth, like so the currency.
Right.
Pounds.
So they'll give you cigarettes and 5 cans of beer, and then they'll give you a little bit of cash on top of that to clean their streets if you're an alcoholic that lives in Amsterdam.
Well, yeah. I mean, you gotta keep even, right? You gotta keep level. You don't want to bottom out. So
I guess it keeps them from sitting on the corner asking for a quarter.
What can you get? Like now, when I went to London, when the Jags played over there this year, the exchange rate was roughly for 10 pounds, 10 pounds sterling. You would get 16. It would take $16 to get 10 pounds. So it's basically $16. What do you get for $16 worth of tobacco? 3 packs of smokes these days?
I have no idea.
I think that sounds about right. I am so glad. I remember the college days when there'd be like 6 of us trying to scrape together enough money for a 12-pack and a pack of 99-cent Parliament Lights. Those were the best cigarettes you ever had when you were, had just a couple of brews when you were dead poor.
Right.
Oh, it's fantastic. Don't smoke, kids. It's bad for you. It's terrible. Don't smoke adults either. But you're on your own. You make your own decisions as far as that goes. But $5 a pack, man, I remember like the high when I was smoking was like maybe $2.50, something like that. That might even be more than that. Now.
It's $14 a pack in New York.
$14 a pack?
Absolutely. It's crazy, right?
What are you serious?
They're trying to get you off, man. They're trying to get you off the cigarettes.
$14 a pack?
And in Kentucky, it's $4.96.
Yeah.
Well, that, yeah, okay.
Plus, they have, like, the tax on soda.
Kentucky's still,
up there,
like,
right?
Doesn't 90% of Kentucky people still work in coal mines? Or is that a
that
an incorrect stereotype? Is that right? So, I mean, I figure if you're working in the coal mine, doesn't really matter, right? Smoke up, Johnny, as far as that goes. Is that an exaggeration, you think? I don't know if I've ever been to the Commonwealth. I think I've driven through it a time or two on some road trips.
Kentucky, I've been to Kentucky.
Have you?
Yeah, it's nice up there.
I've never been there as a destination, I don't think. I think I've driven through, going to Ohio, something along those roads.
The bluegrass state.
Yes.
It's nice.
Lots of grass in Kentucky, Tony. Blue and otherwise. I watched Justified tonight, 10 o'clock
on
FX.
That's what they say.
So they say. I don't know. Like I said.
The soda tax apparently is in California, not New York. So
soda tax?
They're not getting you with both ends. Like, if you want a soda and a cigarette, it's not crazy. But $14 for a pack of cigarettes, that's nuts.
Is that right? That seems...
It's unbelievable. It's right.
Who can afford to smoke? I mean, that's crazy talk. Well, you know what? You know, when I was a kid, so I get it.
How much is, like, nicotine
cost
gum?
Psst, I have no idea. I've never liked the nicotine gum. I did use the patch, though. It does give you a nice buzz, as I recall. But it's got to go cold turkey. I saw this dude. Oh, gosh. Who was this guy I saw on Johnny Carson years ago? Might have been Carson, even, talking about his father, who was like an immigrant. And he said he quit, he quit smoking. He said, he'd always wear a dress shirt with a little pocket, and he'd keep one cigarette in that pocket. Mm-hmm. Every time he wanted to smoke, he'd pull that cigarette out, and he'd look at that cigarette, and he'd say, who is stronger, you or me? Me. And he put it back in his pocket. That's how you do it. It's like Johnny Carson's dad method.
There you go.
Of stopping smoking. Bold moves for the AFC South, Tony, according to, I hesitate to say ESPN.
Let's get bold.
Tim Gower. Of Football Outsiders.
Tim is known for nothing else if not being bold.
He apparently is quite bold. Here's what he wants the rest of the division to do in terms of bold moves. He says the Colts should acquire Marcell Dareus from the Bills for a first-round pick. Never mind that the fact that Dareus, as a player right now, is probably worth significantly more than a late first-round pick. He's a proven guy, one of the better interior defensive linemen in the league.
And I'm sure Rex Ryan is looking to just give him away.
Absolutely. So that would be bold on their behalf. And I was reading some of the comments. The comments were like, yeah, and the Bills should turn around and flip that for Tom Brady. Right? Because I guess, we're playing.
First round pick? How can you say no, New England?
It's Fantasy Island.
They'll give you both of their first round picks for Tom Brady.
Yes. Houston says, well, Buffalo would only have a first round. I guess they don't have a first rounder.
They don't,
so
technically.
It would be, they'd might want to acquire a first-round pick. That's not the worst of it, okay? It says Houston should learn to love Ryan Fitzpatrick for 2015. All right, I don't know if that's bold or if that's just kind of like, there's really not much of an upgrade out there. And they do mention they could re-sign Ryan Mallett to compete with Fitzpatrick, although the Texans' official site whatever the guy is who's the senior writer there, the equivalent of Johnny O for the outstanding Jaguars.com website, says he indicates that he thinks that Ryan Mallett is the likely opening day starter. They'll probably re-sign him. Makes some sense, although very small body of work for Ryan Mallett last year. Ryan Mallett started just a couple of games, maybe one game he actually started. And overall, 41 of 75, 54.7% passer last year, Tony. He had two touchdowns, two interceptions. He had two touchdowns and one pick in his first extended start. And then the next week was considerably worse than that. So, in just, you know, I think he may be a guy that, you know, they've got a strong running game. You could play action. He's a big pocket type guy. That may be the direction they go. That's not the worst of what ESPN suggests. Let's take a look. Tennessee Titans should use the number two overall pick on Jameis Winston. I guess they're going to put the Jedi mind trick on the Buccaneers to make them leave whoever they want with the number two pick available to them with that selection. So we move past that because who cares about all those teams, right? Jaguars. Here's the Jaguars, what
bold
they should do.
To take a quarterback in the top five.
Right. It's so bold. Especially one that is probably going to be off the board when your pick comes up. That really would be bold. We know the Bucs took him,
right,
but we also would like to select Jameis Winston.
Bold would be like Brett Hundley.
Right.
What?
And just drop the mic, drop the card, walk off.
As their fans go into
Hundley.
A complete panic.
Cross your arms, start bobbing your head. That's right. That's right. We took Brett Hundley. I think that would be bold, and I encourage the Titans to do that with
the number two
overall selection. Here's what the Jags should do, Tony. They should sign Devin McCourty. They should sign Justin Houston.
I'm with you.
They should sign Mike Iapati. Okay?
Okay.
Issues here.
I'm with the first two.
Like, I might be with all three of them.
The potential of the first two, I really like that.
Well, all right. We know there's some issues. Let's start with Justin Houston. What are the odds that Justin Houston, out of all the free agents out there, how many of them are more likely to get the franchise tag than Justin Houston if he doesn't get a long-term deal worked out?
Zero.
Zero.
I don't think
right?
anybody's more likely.
I don't think they are. I think he is equally as likely as a guy like Dez Bryant.
He's not getting out of Kansas City.
No
without
way.
You giving up a couple of drafts.
Mid-20s, and he had a 22 sack season. Not happening. Yeah, all right. If you franchise him and you could potentially sign him for a couple of top draft picks. Now, he is a proven commodity, but I don't see the Jags giving up two first-round draft picks at salary-controlled pricing. That's the other thing that comes with it. You sign Justin Houston, and what are you talking about? 15, 20 million a year, something in that range. So, okay, it would be bold. I would like them to sign him, but there's practically no chance in reality that a 26-year-old guy with 22 sacks is going to hit free agency. You go to Devin McCourty. It's pretty much the same thing from what everyone says. No one thinks that Devin McCourty is getting loose from the New England Patriots. By the way, his brother Jason was talking yesterday, said if he does happen to get there, which his own brother said, I don't think he's getting out of New England. But if he does at least hit the open market, I'm going to do everything I can to bring him to the Tennessee Titans, which is an interesting corollary as well. I mean, clearly, if the Jags are going to get Devin McCourty, they're going to have to outbid everybody if he ever did make it, which is extremely unlikely. If you put it at 100 on the scale of 1 to 100 that you don't think Justin Houston's available, where does McCourty come in on the scale?
Just below that.
90?
Yeah.
90th percentile, something
I don't
in
know.
That range?
New England, with the flexibility they still do have with the cap, and it's not that much money.
And
even
if they don't
you
bring
have
back Revis,
him, right.
boom.
I mean, you're talking 10. Basically, to keep him for a year under your control, I don't see him getting out.
Okay, we all would like these guys. So I'm not killing the guy who wrote the story over those two suggestions, no matter how unlikely that they'd be available. Because if they were available, yes, the Jags should pursue guys like that. No question. Here's where he loses everyone and all credibility forever. Remember the guy's name once again, Tom Gower. Okay, Football Outsiders, which is an affiliated branch of
Tom
ESPN. Tom the Bold Gower says, Jacksonville should also improve its offense, Tony.
Yeah.
Specifically the offensive line.
All right.
I agree.
Yeah.
We're in agreement so far.
Let's roll.
The Jags, he goes on, could address either or both positions on the right side. Okay, right tackle, I'm
getting.
Well,
we got a couple right tackles. that you could address. But he's not talking about guard.
Well, he's saying both positions on the right side. He's not saying two tackles. He goes on to say signing Mike Iapati would get the Jags an immediate impact right guard, probably their weakest overall line position last season. And there goes, I mean, how do you write that? How do you write that?
Just because he's a rookie.
I mean, is that really, is that what it boils down to? Universally acclaimed by everyone who watched this team, that Brandon Linder was the best offensive lineman on the Jacksonville Jaguars last year.
Yeah.
You know, and we've heard the suggestion, we even talked about it on the show. Somebody said, hey, what if you sign Iapati, consider moving Linder to tackle? Well, it wouldn't be because Linder didn't get the job done. It would be because you're trying to get your best players all on the field in that scenario.
Right. You know, it's stories like that that make me understand why players don't like talking to us.
Yes.
You know,
it's something
like that where it's just so completely so far off the mark that when a player says, I'm not going to talk to you, you don't print the right things. You don't write it the right way. You always twist it into something it's not. It's this kind of thing where it's like the weakest spot on the team is considered actually the strongest spot on that offensive line last year, at least locally and among the quote-unquote experts around the league who break down tape on a week-to-week basis.
Right.
That's insane.
And you can say, well, did he mean to say left instead of right? Well, he said both positions on the right side. We know they're not going to try to move Jokel out of that spot. He's talking about right tackle and right guard. That's what the guy's talking about. He stated it a couple of times. And then probably the weakest overall position last season. Not being tackle, which you can make that argument, the right tackle position probably was.
I don't have a problem with the Jaguars going and signing Iapati.
Right, if they have a plan to use him and Beatles and Linder in some effective way.
I don't have a problem with that, but it's not so that they can replace Brandon Linder. That would not be the plan.
Because he didn't get the job done. So that, it's just like, really, how much research is put into this article, which is only about four teams? Only four teams you're writing about here. How much fact-checking do you need to do? Not very much to, you know, you're talking about less than 10 players total that you're talking about from these four teams. And, you know, how much does it take to look up your assertions and see if they're actually correct? I just don't get it. I don't get it. So I get when, like you said, when some players get fed up with the media and fans get fed up with the media as well, although a lot of players use that as an excuse.
Oh, they do.
You know, I think that's part of it. All right, caller said the Netherlands uses euros, not pounds.
Sorry.
Whatever. All right. Maybe they're accepting pounds for the exchange.
Maybe that signal was euros. I don't know what the signal for euro
was. Oh, is that what it was?
Could have been.
What was the signal? Do you remember what it was?
No.
Okay. Yeah, then we'll move on.
Yeah.
We'll close the book on that.
If that guy says it was euros, it was euros. That's
I have no fine. Idea what the exchange rate is on euros, by the way, Tony. So there you go.
Yeah.
Further, maybe one of our fine feathered friends over in Europe, Christoph or Stevie Howland, will fill us in.
I bet it's close to the same.
I think euros is pretty strong. I don't know. The pound's pretty strong, too. I read something last night that said the strong dollar is impacting. I don't know what it was impacting, but I was like, when's the last time I read strong dollar? I don't know. I guess I'm just basing it on my one overseas trip. But
right.
There you have it. So feel free, as if you didn't know this already, to ignore the writings of one Tom Gowan from Football Outsiders.
By the way, and I'm not saying that they're the Bible on this kind of thing, but Pro Football Focus had Brandon Linder as the 10th highest graded guard in the league.
You think they're the Bible on these kind of things, don't they?
I do not, but it is at least something to look at. The 10th highest rated guard
in
the league.
If you are this guy, wouldn't you go to some source like that, even if you didn't have a local contact that could fill you in?
At least look at it.
You would think.
And they had Zane Beatles at 32, for what it's worth.
All right, so
that's still, I mean, you're talking
that's not
top
terrible.
Half.
That's right in the middle of the pack of starting guards in the National Football League. So you could always have worse, right? There you have it. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. Lauren Brooks is going to join us. Hopefully she makes it in time in studio before top of the hour. We'll bring you Shad Khan, Mark Lamping, and company with the Jags State of the Franchise address still to come, this date in football history, the Honda drive around the NFL, and a bunch more. If you want to get in, 641-1010 is the phone number. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars Today continues here at 1010XL 92.5 FM. Before the top of the hour gets here, we'll do this state in football history, the Honda drive around the NFL as well. And then in about 19 minutes, Shad Khan steps to the podium You'll hear his press conference live on 1010XL 92.5 FM, and we'll stick with that as long as we think it still has some value to our listening audience. So listen in for that coming up right in the middle of Jaguars Today. Look who's here. Hi,
hello.
Lauren Brooks. How are you?
Hi, Mike Dempsey. I'm good. How are you?
The star of
Hi,
Helmets Dempsey. And Heels, Tony.
I one of the stars.
I've been trying to book you told us the whole week in Phoenix that you were the star of Helmets and Heels.
You're right, but that was never supposed to make it to air.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. She didn't say that. I've been saying that. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks. I was humbled by my introduction. That was excellent.
Oh, were you?
I was driving in, yeah.
Yeah? How are things at Augusta National?
They're great, although, you know, it worked out well that the state of the franchise was going to be given on a rainy day because it enables me to kind of bounce around and do, you know, things that I want to do.
That's nice, right? You'd be out there rolling the stint meter, see if they're up to speed so far. What do you think, by the way, how would they feel if they if you just, like, rolled the stint meter back to, like, an 8 for Augusta National? You
know,
made them really slow.
I mean, I'm in charge.
Yeah, you are. I think we should mix it up this year. So if you didn't know, Lauren.
I would not appreciate it. As a viewer, I kind of like the slick greens.
I kind of do, too.
Makes it more fun.
Lauren, key question for you this week is, will you turn in your selection for your fantasy golf league on time?
Gosh, after 2 weeks of forgetting. Now, last week I blame on food poisoning, but other than that, I have no excuse. So this week I absolutely am going to pick and actually turn in my golfer. And I think I'm going to get some advice from you considering
I did well last week. Yeah. I give Tony all the credit because he's got the Vanderbilt connection with Brant Snedeker.
I'm glad you can only use him once because I get no blame this year.
That's right. He goes, is that the only Vandy golfer on tour?
I did it.
Tony got the job done.
I got the one.
So
as much as I know about golf, I don't know if there are any other Vanderbilt
golfers. There's no other Vanderbilt
golfers.
Kids on tour right now.
Vanderbilt kids? Is that right? Tony officially just became an old man. In the last couple minutes. How's Helmets and Heels going?
It is going well, thanks. We're live on location next week at Broadway Ristorante. And then St. Patrick's Day, we are live at Culhane's Irish Pub. So if you can...
Designated drivers abound.
Yeah, if you can go into work a little late on Wednesday and or just skip work entirely, I think that's going to be one heck of a party as well.
Yeah, you know, let's see. That's 17th. I believe that'll be... Mm-hmm. Right smack in the week I'm taking off. So there you have it.
You know what? We'll get you a room at One Ocean, and then you don't even have to drive.
You know all the right people to talk to, apparently.
Right. You know what I realized today, though, is I can't play hooky from my job with this job because I can't say, oh, you know, I'm going to take a long lunch and, you know, I'll be back a little later because on the airwaves of Jacksonville comes.
I'm going to get all your
Lauren's
business
coming
out.
Coming in, right. And then obviously we're on the radio. So
yeah, is that okay?
Good thing I'm, absolutely. I'm very honest.
You knew you were coming on the radio.
Yes, actually, the owner and my boss said to me that if Shad offers me a job, which obviously he's not going to do, but Shad and I, you know, have a good relationship. So he said, if he offers you a job, all I want is access of his yacht and some sort of terrace suite box, something like that. That's all he wants.
I brought a sport coat today because
demands. Every time you come in, their demands are crazy. Yeah, you can go out to the Super Bowl as long as you get us 2 tickets. And...
Yeah, right, exactly. And I don't think they understand.
The world I live in.
You
can work for the Jags as long as we get on the yacht.
Right.
You understand nobody gets on the yacht.
That's my goal in life.
Shad's paid me more attention now that he realizes I know you than in the previous several years that we've both been here in the city of Jacksonville. So
how do you know me?
I don't even remember. It just doesn't matter. Doesn't everyone know Lauren? That should have been my answer. Are you kidding me? Everybody knows Lauren, Shad. But I went with the cargo shorts and t-shirt effect with him, and it hasn't done me any good. So maybe I wore a sport coat today
I see you.
I'm trying to get adopted, Lauren. You know, I need some kind of retirement plan. I don't know if you've looked into the 401ks that radio provides.
I have, and that's why I got out of it.
And that's why you're working at Augusta National these days. All right, we're going to take a quick early time out here because we want to come back with this date in football history and the Honda drive around the NFL and get you on time to the state of the franchise press conference at the top of the hour. So keep it right here. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks here with you. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this state in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. A lot of famous birthdays on this date, none more so than 1936, Jim Brown. was born on this day. Tony, what position did Jim Brown play?
Fullback?
Yes. Ah, good man. Trick question, to be sure, but he was listed as a fullback in his time in the National Football League. Never missed a game due to injury, and of course, was an actor as well. Name me a movie other than The Dirty Dozen that Jim Brown appeared in.
Mars Attacks.
Mars Attacks. Very nice. You ever see Ice Station Zebra?
I did.
Very good flick. Cold War era kind of flickish kind of stuff. So Jim Brown, born on this day in football history, and to my knowledge, the only guy in three different sports Hall of Fames, pro football, college football, and lacrosse Hall of Fames, considered maybe the greatest lacrosse player of all time. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry on Gate Parkway. If you need a family dentist, if you need cosmetic work done, call 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. Press conference in 5 minutes. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, is there any intrigue league-wide with the quarterbacks at this week's NFL Combine? You know there is. Jameis Winston, considered by many to be the premier target for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with the number one overall pick. But what does he look like without his shirt on after that photo has been circulating throughout the internet this week? Marcus Mariota is considered by many to be a system quarterback. Many believe he should take advantage of any opportunity to throw off that stigma, meaning that he should throw this week at the NFL Combine. Mariota, though, says that he is not sure whether or not he will throw and says that he and his team of advisors will make a decision on that later on this week. Also, Doug Baldwin, Seattle Seahawks wide receiver, has come out and apologized for his antics following scoring a go-ahead touchdown for the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl just a couple of weeks ago, where he dropped trowel on the field. Many probably remember the celebration that he put on there. He said that it was the source of it was 2 weeks of frustration trying to get ready for going head-to-head with Darrelle Revis, and that's who the celebration was targeted towards. May want to remind Doug Baldwin that that was his only catch of the game and that the referee picked off Darrelle Revis on that particular play. But Doug Baldwin has come out and apologized for that particular celebration. All right, we are counting down to the State of the Jaguars, Mark Lamping, Shot Khan, among others, set to speak today. We're going to carry it live here in the next couple of minutes, courtesy of Jaguars.com. Mike Dempsey, Lauren Brooks, already on their way upstairs. And look, we've been talking for the last couple of days about what exactly we expect to see or hear at the press conference today. And we all know that for me, last year, it was the first time that you saw just how much of an effect that playing a game a year over in London could potentially have for this franchise. We had heard Shot Khan and Mark Lamping before that talk about how important they felt it was for this team, the stability of Jacksonville in Jacksonville, to do that kind of thing. But it wasn't until this press conference last year, the State of the Jaguars last year, that we got that real representation for what that means for Jacksonville from a financial standpoint. And look, it was a heck of a moment for me to see it actually physically displayed on that graph. I'm curious today to see if we're along the same lines from a Jacksonville perspective, if that London experiment is still booming as well as it was at this point last year. You kind of get the sense that it is, based on his comments to Shot Khan's comments to Mike while we were up at the Super Bowl, saying that he would be eager to extend that deal to play a game a year over there in London. You got to get the feeling from that kind of thing that Shot Khan feels good about the relationship between the two sides. Right now, obviously, we want to see what's going on with the shipyards as well. The details for a new practice facility should be unveiled today. Shot was all kinds of excited about unveiling that. Apparently, there's a graphic that will be represented, and we will carry it as long as we can today. We'll get you all the pertinent information. We can take you down to the bottom of the hour, at least with this thing, if we need to. So at least 30 minutes as we await the beginning of this thing. Jackson DeVille is in the room, as well as a bunch of Jacksonville members of the media, as we wait for the State of the Jaguars, which has become one of the big offseason moments for this team. We're now just 3 weeks away from free agency. Probably won't be a whole lot of talk about that today, because that's not what Shot Khan and Mark Lamping are here to talk about or really in charge of. They leave that to the football people there in the building. So we'll continue to talk for the next 3 weeks about getting ready for free agency. But today is all about where this franchise is away from the football field. Last year we saw the unveiling of the plans for the new scoreboards, which obviously went in and were a huge success. The plans for the cabanas and the pools, so this is where we saw that for the first time last year. And a lot of fans got very excited about that. This year is going to be a completely different kind of thing. Not so much renovations to the stadium to talk about today, but more, again, the expanding footprint of the Jacksonville Jaguars here in the Jacksonville area. And what is going to go on with those shipyards? We've been asking that question for a couple of years. Now we may get our first idea of exactly what the plan might be for those here in the next couple of minutes. I can see Mark Lamping saying hello to somebody on there as we are walking you up to the beginning of this press conference today, the state of the Jaguars. And, you know, it's going to be interesting. It was last year watching the plans be unveiled for this team and just seeing the expanding footprint of Shad Khan. And I said this last night, but as great as Wayne and Dolores Weaver were for the city, and we are forever in their debt as members of the community of Jacksonville, forever in their debt for what they did to bring the National Football League here, to bring the Jacksonville Jaguars to Jacksonville, there is a potential with Shad Khan running the ship here in Jacksonville that we've never experienced before. There is this anticipation. I don't think we've ever had this kind of anticipation for a free agent season like we're having right now. So I think they're about ready to get started. Things have gone dark there in the building. Tyler, let me know when you're ready on your end, and we'll throw it out to those guys.
Absolutely. Quickly, I want to ask you, how much have things changed over the last year? It seemed like this time last year, fans were kind of had some doubts in their mind whether this team was even going to be here.
No, I think some fans may have had those kind of doubts as a video presentation is now rolling out there, taking a look back at the last year. Maybe some fans had some doubts about what the stability was of this franchise in the long term. I think there were some fans that we would talk to on a weekly basis that were curious what exactly Shad Khan's plans were, especially when that plan got announced to play a game over in London, and they kept insisting that the idea of playing a game in London was to make the franchise more stable in Jacksonville, and I think that the numbers last year showed that, and, you know, adding the billboards, adding the pools, we're going to build a practice facility, we're going to go do something with the shipyards. All these things continue to make a lot more people here in Jacksonville feel better about the future of this team as far as Shad Khan wanting to keep it here. And I think he's kept on that message from day one since he got here to Jacksonville, that his plan was to be in Jacksonville to keep this team here. That was the plan he wanted. And honestly, I think he's a businessman too, that as long as it's financially viable for him to do that kind of thing and the fans keep supporting it, then he's willing to be here in Jacksonville. And if it ever gets to a point where that's not going to work, then it'll be time to go from Jacksonville. But we're not to that point yet as Mark Lamping walks to the podium now. Are we ready to go? Let's do it.
Hey, what a great crowd. Imagine what it's going to be like when we start winning a lot of football games. So, but we're on our way, that's for sure. To get this started today, it's my pleasure to introduce the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Shad Khan.
Thank you, Mark. What a great video. And let me start off by personally recognizing and thanking Mayor Alvin Brown over there, and City Council President Clay Yarbrough, and members of the Jacksonville City Council. Many of you are present here today. And, of course, I'd like to offer a warm hello to all the Jaguars fans. We're watching online, both here and in UK. So I know Super Bowl was just a few weeks ago, but I tell you, felt pretty good kind of watching that video and watching football again. Serves as a reminder of the power of the NFL and the impact the Jaguars have in Jacksonville and beyond. We completed our 20th season in the NFL, and my third season as the owner of your Jacksonville Jaguars. And I want to really make it clear, it's my responsibility and yours that we deliver a team and an organization to you that you can be proud of on game days and every other day of the year. So as we kind of reflect back, I know we owe you better results on game day. I know that. Dave knows that. Gus knows that. And I do believe that we're on the verge of turning the corner with a number of our young players, especially Blake Bortles as quarterback. And this is really the first season coming up for me where we enter a new season with stability at quarterback. So no pressure, Blake, but we're counting on you. So I believe in what we're doing, and I know many of the Jaguars fans share my optimism, home or away. Opening day now is 7 months or so, and I'm ready. So we've got quite a presentation for you today to kind of share with you vision of the Jaguars and vision for Jacksonville. So let's get on with the show. So Mark, please come back.
Thanks, Sean. This is the third installment of the State of the Franchise, and the reason behind this is somewhat unusual. I'm not aware of any organizations that do these types of presentations that are so open and transparent, but it started with Shad's commitment after purchasing the team to have a stable, successful, sustainable NFL franchise here in Jacksonville for a long, long time to come. And if we're going to make, if we're going to set that as an objective, we have to tell you what we're trying to accomplish. We have to measure ourselves against what we're doing. We have to be our own worst critic at times, and we have to spell out what we're trying to accomplish. So today is a little bit of our report card. We're going to give you an update. We're going to look forward to what the future holds. We're going to revisit local revenue. We've talked about the importance of local revenue each of the last two editions of the State of the Franchise. We've talked about in-game experience. We have to improve that. That's the same challenge every NFL team has. Probably every team that hopes to get people to come into any large facilities to enjoy the game when they have the alternative of watching it on TV. Talk a little bit about this great market, some of its realities, some of its unique challenges, and some of its very unique attributes. Initiatives for 2015, and Shad will talk about the shipyards. To try to reset, you know, where we are, local revenue is extremely important. Why is that? Well, it's through that and how we compare to other NFL teams that we have the ability to reinvest in the team and the infrastructure around the team. That leads, hopefully, to enhanced on-field performance and a stadium experience which delivers more loyal fans, which sells more tickets, which sells more sponsorship, which generates more local revenue, a very virtuous circle, and something that is our model as we come to work each and every day. Last year when we talked, and again this is through 2013, we underscored the reality of what's happened here in Jacksonville in terms of our local revenue from the top of the NFL when the team first started playing about 20 years ago to near the bottom where we are today. So how are we doing in local revenue? Well, we didn't make a lot of... We were up 8.3% from 2012 to 2013, and given the strength and the power of the NFL, that was enough to keep us in the position we were in from 2012 to 2013. We had a big year in 2013 to 2014. Local revenue was up just under 24%, and while we won't have our rankings within the NFL until later this spring, we certainly expect good news from that and making progress. We're nowhere near where we need to be, but we're clearly making progress. Where's our local revenue come from? Basically comes from three primary sources. The largest by far is our ticketing revenue, which represents about 60% of our total local revenue. Our sponsorship revenue, shown in brown at 33%, and 5.9% is the dollars that our fans spend when they park their cars, when they buy their soft drinks, when they purchase their replica jersey. And you can see, again, this big growth that we've had over the past couple years,
with ticket revenue continue to be our single largest and most important source. But one thing we have seen, while all three of these segments have grown, we have seen the growing importance of our sponsorship revenue, and that's a real tribute to the support we've received from local companies. We'll be talking about one of them today with U.S. Assure, but also the continued growth of companies outside of Jacksonville that are investing in the Jaguars, whether it's domestic companies investing in Jacksonville or our partners in the U.K. Why is ticket revenue important? This chart basically shows the relationship between clubs' net receipts, their ticket revenue, and where they rank in terms of overall revenue. You can see a direct correlation between how much ticket revenue you generate and how that relates to how much total revenue you're going to generate. So NFL average right in the middle, we're still in the bottom quadrant amongst all teams. And again, why is local revenue important? Well, if you look at the teams that are the most valuable, the most profitable, the most stable, and that's our goal right now is stability, you will find that it's direct related to the amount of local revenue they generate and how that compares to the other 32 member NFL clubs. So it starts with how many people attend our games. How many tickets do we sell? In 2012, we sold just under 65,000 tickets. We had a step back from 2012 to 2013 to just under 60,000. And our results this year, 62,692. So nice progress moving forward and inching towards the NFL average of 68,488 per game. So the key was growth year over year. How did that growth compare to NFL teams? Well, good news. We were the fourth fastest growing team in the NFL this year in terms of tickets sold. So if we're going to catch up with those ahead of us, we need to be growing faster than those ahead of us, and we had a good year in that regard. Ticket revenue is the second piece. How many tickets do you sell? What's the average price of those tickets that you sell? It results in total ticket revenue that we're generating. We were basically flat from 2012 to 2013, but we had 11% growth in our ticket revenue from 2013 to 2014. Good growth with about 15% of our total ticket revenue generated by our game in London. Again, good news in terms of how are we doing versus the rest of the league. And in this case, our growth was second in the league in terms of ticket revenue. That's a very good performance, very promising performance. It's productive. You know, we lag behind really just one team, and that's the 49ers who moved into their new stadium. And this is a little sobering. You can see the impact of what moving into a new stadium can do for a team, particularly as it relates to ticket revenue. So really good news here. We're growing faster than those that are have more revenue than we do. As we break out our ticket revenue, the single largest component of ticket revenue is our general admission seating. It's our largest percentage of tickets. Over $50,000 of our tickets are general admission. They represent 47% of our total ticket revenue, followed by club seats at about 30%. Everyone in this market who's been around for 20 years knows how important club seats are to Jacksonville. Jacksonville would not be an NFL city if it was not for the club seats that were sold in advance of the decision on the expansion franchise. So 30% of our ticket revenue comes from club seats, about 15% from suites, and 9.1 is from a category we call other premium products. This is something we've been focusing on. We talked about it last year in the state of the franchise address. These are all the new products we've been adding. We've been trying to get our average ticket price up. We can't do it in this environment by an across-the-board price increase, so we've been adding new products. They've had an impact. Almost 10% of our ticket revenue now is from these new products, a significant increase from what it was just in 2013. So what is that average ticket price?
You were listening to Jaguars President Mark Lanting and the Jaguars State of the Franchise on your flagship home for the Jacksonville Jaguars, 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It happened by the implementation of variable pricing that we were able to implement on single-game ticket sales for our game against the Steelers and the Giants this year. And it also happened through the introduction of these new higher-priced products, which sold through. The market accepted them. When you go back and you look at that 6.4% increase in terms of our average ticket price, and this is really, really important Our club seats represent about 30% of our revenue, and they generated about they were responsible for about 30% of our increase in average ticket price. Our general bowl tickets, which remember was about 45% of our total ticket revenue, generated only 25% of this increase. Why is that? We sold more tickets. And when you sell more tickets in general admission or general seating, you are selling your least expensive tickets. So it actually brought down our average ticket price. Suites didn't have a real big impact because most of those are sold for the season, and we didn't have the impact of variable pricing. But these other premium products, which represented under 10% of our total ticket sales, was responsible for four times that in terms of our average ticket price. So this strategy is working. Again, the important thing to take away from this is we're trying to find every way we possibly can to get our average ticket price up without going across the board to all our fans with a price increase. What were those new products? The kickoff club tables, the VIP field club seats that were added, the smart pharmacy spa cabanas, the Clevelander Deck terrace cabanas, and the Clevelander Deck bar rail, all introduced this year, and all of them very well received, all of them sold through on essentially 100% basis. So the good news is we increased our average ticket price. The challenge is we're still near the bottom of the National Football League. So we need to continue to work really hard to get this average ticket price hopefully up towards the middle of the league. That's not going to happen overnight, but that's what our goal is. Sponsorship revenue. I mentioned previously that our sponsorship group is taking on a much greater importance to our overall revenue stream. Sponsorship revenue from 2012 to 2013 was up 25%. It was up another 25% from 2013 to 2014. And you can see on top the importance that our international activities in London represent. So this is an area that is becoming more and more important. And again, it doesn't happen without the support and belief from local companies, national companies, and in our case, some international companies. So where do we stand? We showed you earlier where we stand in terms of our average ticket price. In terms of sponsorship, in 2012, we were 28th in the NFL in terms of sponsorship revenue. We jumped up to 23rd in 2013, and we think we're going to be at least 22nd this year. We don't have final year numbers, but it will be 22nd or perhaps a little higher. And you can see the impact that London has on that. So we're growing, and we're growing faster than many of the teams that are near us in terms of our total revenue rankings. Just to put this in perspective, if we were able to get to 22nd in the National Football League in total local revenue, we would be turning the clock back to 2002. And those of you that were around here knew where the Jaguars were in 2002, coming out of the first 5 or 6 years of the franchise, very, very strong, beginning to erode, but a very, very solid franchise. Stadium per caps, the amount of money that is spent by our customers when they come to EverBank Field, was up 6.2% in 2013. It grew by 12% this year. How did that happen? Well, it didn't happen because we raised concession prices. In fact, as you're aware, we began a policy not that long after Shad purchased the team to allow our fans to bring their own food and beverage into the stadium. But we've been able to get there by doing several initiatives where we've invested money to make these things happen. Make the service in the concession stands more efficient. So we have a partnership with Underwriters Laboratory. They came in, they did time and motion studies. They tell you how to do the lines. They tell you which products to have in which concession stands. So that has helped. We've added new food and beverage products in and around the stadium. A couple of them here. We've got a chicken product back there, a burger product over there that have worked really well. And as we did both the north end zone and some of the enhancements to the south end zone, there were added places where you could buy food and beverage. All of that combined to a 12.1% increase in our stadium per caps. So again, here's our total revenue growth, 8.3% from 2002 through 2012 to 2013. Again, that just sort of kept us where we were in the league, and 2013 to 14, revenue growing 23.5%. So we're interested to see where we are in terms of rankings. But clearly, two conclusions. Going in the right direction, long way to go. London.
All right, you are listening to Jaguars President Mark Lamping and the Jaguars State of the Franchise. We are your flagship home for the Jacksonville Jaguars, 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. We will rejoin Mark Lamping in the presentation. We want to make sure that you get to hear from Shad Khan and the plan from this team for the Shipyards. We will rejoin that press conference, the State of the Jaguars, here in just a moment on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. All right. Our coverage continues of the Jacksonville Jaguars State of the Franchise. Mark Lampin still speaking to the media. We'll get back out to him in just a moment. Shad Khan expected to talk sometime in the next 10 minutes or so about what the plans for the Shipyards are. We will make sure we get that to you live. Right now, let's rejoin Mark Lamping, Jaguars president, and the Jaguars State of the Franchise.
The population of Duval County in gold and Mecklenburg County in blue. Mecklenburg County is Charlotte, North Carolina. And back in 1993, when the franchise was awarded, Jacksonville was 25%, or Duval County was 25% larger than Mecklenburg County. And we've had great growth. We've had growth in Duval County, and we've had growth in the state of Florida that many communities would be envious of. But Mecklenburg County now is about 11% larger than Duval County. Now, I know we've had growth in the outer counties as well, but the importance of this is the game plan that maybe was put together to have Jacksonville be a stable NFL franchise in the mid-90s, that game plan doesn't work anymore. So we have to deploy different strategies. And it also underlines the importance. If you go back to when Charlotte was awarded an NFL expansion franchise, they went to great pains to say, we're not Charlotte. We're not even North Carolina. We're the Carolina Panthers. Why did they do that? Because they only had 588,000 people that lived in their primary marketing county in Mecklenburg County. So a lot of things that we can learn from this, and we're fortunate that we're in a market that's growing, that's for sure. But beyond just the number of people that live in any market, how many of those people say that they're fans of the NFL? Well, in the average NFL market, 54.5% of the population says they're fans of the NFL. Not fans of any one team. This is, are you a fan of the NFL? The average NFL market, 54.5%. Jacksonville, not surprising, is higher than the average NFL market at 63.6%. None of us are surprised by that. We're actually ranked 13th in the National Football League amongst NFL markets. The number one market, by way of reference, is Pittsburgh. 81% of the residents of Pittsburgh are fans of the National Football League. So if you take our market size and you apply the percentage of people that are NFL fans, we have 1.75 million people in total. 1.1 million of them say they're NFL fans, compared to the average market of just under 3 million, second smallest. The smallest, by the way, everyone would know, is Green Bay, Wisconsin, sort of the epitome of a regional franchise. The good news is we had shockingly positive growth last year. I'm not sure we figured out why, but this is information that we've been tracking for quite some time. The number of NFL fans within the Jacksonville market last year grew by 21.9%. So the pie has gotten significantly bigger. Now, we do know that the NFL and its popularity continues to grow. This was something that we think we can hopefully continue and try to take advantage of. So the pie of NFL fans has gotten bigger. Okay? Well, what share of that pie do the Jaguars own? When you ask that 1.1 million people, which is your favorite team, and you can only name one team, 35.4% say the Jaguars. In the average NFL market, it's 54.9%. Okay. How is that tracked over time? Well, it tracks pretty closely to team performance in this market, which, again, is not a surprise. As the team wins, you can expect to have greater penetration in terms of the number of NFL fans that cite the Jaguars as their favorite team. So we expect this to grow as team performance improves. But there's another lesson here, and we've tried to apply it. We cannot afford in this market to ignore all the other NFL fans, even if the Jaguars are not their number one team. So that's why we show red zone at each and every game. That's why we so frequently put information up regarding what's happening around the league. That's why we made the huge investment in the fan cave, in the south end zone. So can this grow? It certainly can grow, and it will grow along with team performance. But the good news is we held our own. We picked up a little bit in terms of a percentage in a market that was growing really, really fast. So this was very positive, and as a result, we picked up a lot of Jaguar fans this year. And if you look at local fan growth, again, this is the number of fans. The source of this information is the ESPN Sports Bowl. We were the fastest growing in the National Football League. Can we point to something specifically as to why this happened, other than everything that we're doing and everything the National Football League is doing? No, we don't think there's one, you know, magic bullet here to be able to solve this. But this is a real positive for us. NFL is growing in Jacksonville. The number of people that say the Jaguars are their favorite team is growing in Jacksonville, and that will pay dividends for us in the future. But we need to keep pouring it on. We need to get more aggressive, not less aggressive. Television ratings. I should have Vito do this part of the presentation because he reports on it more frequently than anybody. The average television rating for Jaguar games this year, 20.7. NFL average was 28.2. Look at the red bars. The red bars are the eight smallest NFL markets. And what you find is five of the top seven markets in terms of average ratings are small NFL markets. We don't fit that profile. We don't fit that profile for all the reasons we just discussed. We are not the typical small market. We are a transient market that has a lot of people that come here from outside of Jacksonville. So we have to deal with this market a little differently. But the other thing to look at down below is the average number of people that are watching the games. And the Jaguars are last in the National Football League because the size of our market and our ratings. That's how you arrive at that number. And again, no matter how high your ratings are, you cannot get into the top half of the National Football League in terms of the average number of people that are watching the game. All eight of the lowest quartile teams in the National Football League in terms of television, in terms of population are in the bottom half, all lower than the average NFL television audience of 500,000 people. But we had ratings growth this year. In fact, the fourth highest rating growth in the National Football League, up 13.3%, so we feel good about that. Driven by, I think, a lot of excitement around Blake, a lot of excitement around the young players, and a lot of excitement, I think, about the direction of the franchise. We're also a market, as we showed earlier, that doesn't have the corporate base, and that's reflected in our business metrics, something as simple as the number of all of our tickets that we sell, how many are sold to corporate accounts. The average NFL team has a third, 30% of their season ticket accounts are businesses. We're at 20%. And we're introducing a program next week called Jaguars Black, which will be an overall umbrella program that packages all of our corporate initiatives. It does it in a way that's really focused on helping drive business, particularly for small businesses, and you'll learn more about this next week. As far as 2015 is concerned, we talked about the impact that these new products have had. We're going to expand that to the south end zone. This year we'll be adding additional kickoff club tables, and we're going to introduce the rail seating. Both these products are all-inclusive, by the way. The rail seating that was so well-received in the north end zone, we're extending that to the south end zone on top of the State Farm Neighborhood Fan Cave. Club seats. Club seats represent 30% of our total ticket revenue, a very, very important source of our revenue, helped make Jacksonville an NFL city, generates a very, very high average ticket price. And this shows that typically over time, other than at the first few years of the franchise, we've been selling around 80%, sometimes less than that, of the total inventory. We introduced this concept last year. with the idea that we just can't get to balance in terms of supply and demand for our club seats. And if you look around here, while we've done in partnership with the city a lot to keep this relevant and keep it up to date, it is due for a major facelift. If you take a look at the number of club seats and other premium seats that the Jaguars have, we're fourth in the National Football League with almost 13,000 premium seats. Again, small market, relatively small corporate base, and we have the fourth highest number of premium seats. We think that's too many. That's about 45% higher than the NFL average of just under 9,000. So we're thrilled with the announcement that we made yesterday. We'll talk a little bit more today about the naming of the clubs at Everbank Field by U.S. Assure, the official naming rights partner of the U.S. Assure clubs at Everbank Field. This is a huge initiative for us for a couple of reasons. You'll hear more about it from Shad in a minute. Hopefully, we'll be able to get these renovations done. This is a big week. There's a hearing at the Capitol on Thursday. Hopefully, it goes well. If it doesn't go well, maybe there's a plan B. I don't know. So this is a big week for this. But to have a local company that has deep roots in Jacksonville with a family, the Petways, that have deep roots with the Jaguars franchise, going back to original partners of Wayne and DeLarce, and even Ty's father, Tom, predated part of the Touchdown Jacksonville. To have a family like the Petways, a company like U.S. Assure, show confidence in the direction we're going, that almost says more to us than the commercial aspects of this relationship. Not to say the commercial aspects are not important, but the idea that we can have a company like this partnering with is we think internally is a big statement. So what's the plan? The plan is to totally renovate both the East and the West Touchdown clubs, to create two new club decks as part of this process. Basically, what we'll end up with is a new lower club lounge and a new upper club lounge. And what happens is we actually remove some seats. And as we remove those seats, we do two things. We create an outdoor terrace at both levels that will allow for food and beverage sales for people that want to get out of their seat and still feel connected to the game. But almost more importantly, we create a glass connection between the club and the seating bowl. So imagine if these renovations were complete and these drapes weren't here, behind us would be a glass wall, and you'd be able to look into the stadium. And that does several things. It keeps the club connected to the stadium, which we think is important as we're trying to differentiate what can happen here versus what happens at home. And it also makes us a much better special event space. So hopefully we can continue to attract more and more events, private parties, other types of events to Everbank Field, because the space will be much more conducive to that type of activity.
You are listening to Jaguars President Mark Lamping and the Jaguars State of the Franchise on your flagship home for the Jacksonville Jaguars, 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Terrace outside that has views of the field. The same thing on the upper level. Total renovation, creation of a new outdoor club deck. This gives you a feel for what the new entrance experience will be like. A new shade entering both on the east and the west side. This is a rough rendering, I might add, of what the clubs could look like. The most two things to take away from this: one is you can see the glass walls, and number two, you can see how important the female fan is to the Jaguars. And this is what the experience would look like outside. Creation of two terraces, provide much-needed shade, particularly on the east side of the stadium. New seats. Fortunately, the seats are about due to be replaced anyway, but to really upgrade this experience. And, you know, just as the club seat buyers did in the early 90s, the club seat buyers today continue to carry a very significant part of the load to make sure that the financial underpinning of the Jacksonville Jaguars stays strong. So we need to make sure that we're providing the right type of value in return for the price that these customers are paying. Closer look of what it would look like outside. So right now our total premium capacity is 12,826. We'd have a reduction of about 20% down to 10,082, and that's still 12-13% more club seats than the average NFL stadium. What does it do to overall capacity? Well, we take out about 3,000 club seats. We then add back in, actually in the clubs, about 400 seats in the form of additional club tables that were so well received last year. So the total Jaguars capacity goes from this year 66,851 to 64,107, or a reduction of 2,744. You know, by the way, you know, if we take the average of what, you know, tickets we've sold each year over the past 3 years against our current capacity, we'll sell about 92%, or we have sold about 92% of our available capacity. When we reduce this capacity, and assuming we don't have additional sales, it takes that up to about 98%. So some would think that seems a little tight. Keep in mind our goal at some point in time is to get rid of these tarp seats. So if demand gets so high and we believe that at putting more lower-priced ticket inventory onto the market, we have the capacity to do that. And just as we did with the North Deck, this seating change will be designed in a way that we can come back in, replace that seating capacity. So net-net, Dave Harrell will be happy to know, the total capacity of 82,917 does not change. Okay. And what does that put us then in the league? Well, our capacity would go down by about 4% from 66,851 to 64,107, a 4% decrease. But as you can see, everybody's very closely grouped down at the bottom half here. And we think a size of a market, which is makes much more sense for a community this size. So with that, I'd like to invite Shad Khan back to the stage. Shad?
Thank you, Mark. As you've noted, we have much to celebrate off the field, and thanks to U.S. Ashore, we have a lot to anticipate. The West Touchdown Club, where we are today, is where I first met many of you when I was introduced here in 2011. It holds fond memories for me. And this space, as well as the East Touchdown Club, has served our fans for well over two decades now. But as you know by now, we aspire to be better. And this is where U.S. Ashore comes in. As Mark really went in great length, U.S. Ashore has agreed to become the naming rights partner for our club areas here at Everbank Field beginning this season. The commitment by U.S. Ashore, a company with deep roots in Jacksonville, really deeper roots than even the Jaguars, is the kind of commitment that further strengthens our franchise here in Jacksonville. We have great plans. I think, again, Mark shared some of those with you, and it's a privilege for us to know that we have a partner like U.S. Ashore that shares in our goal, which is to provide absolutely the very best for our fans. And I think the surveys that you saw showed how we accomplished that, and our goal is to really stay there, which is to be among the best in the NFL. So with that, I'd like to thank and welcome to the stage CEO and chairman of U.S. Ashore and longtime partner of the Jaguars, our friend Ty Pettway.
Thank you. This is a great honor for U.S. Ashore. I think every day is a good day to be a Jaguar, and on behalf of 200 people at my office at U.S. Ashore, it's an extremely special one today. So we started this partnership 2 years ago with the sponsorship of the London Games. It's been a huge success, and the timing really worked out perfect for U.S. Ashore, and we this is really the extension of a partnership that happened 2 years ago, and we're looking forward to it extending more. You know, with Shad's vision and Mark's execution, it's really the beginning of a long-term relationship. So we're excited to be part of the Jaguars.
All right, we will rejoin Shad Khan in the presentation of the Jaguar State of the Franchise here in just a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
We tasked Populous, and they really answered the challenge to bring our concept of shipyards to life. And I'm confident today you'll be pleased and impressed. We first expressed interest in the shipyards in June 2013, but really it piqued my interest from the very first day in 2011 I came here. And, you know, maybe not in some of the best light, driving to the stadium for the first time. I mean, here's a beautiful stretch of Jacksonville riverfront connecting and linking downtown to the sports complex, and it's sitting empty and neglected. Front door to downtown Jacksonville with no porch light, no welcome mat, really didn't make sense. So, and, you know, over time, I've kind of learned some of the history of the shipyards. We could even call it the Boulevard of Broken Dreams. Lawsuits, bankruptcies, and too many failed attempts really to mention. Hopefully, all of that will end in about what we are about to present to you today. It's the right plan for continued stability and future of the Jaguars. But most importantly, I think it represents a signature opportunity for the future of Jacksonville and downtown, an opportunity that is rare, immediate, and vitally important. So remember what I told you last summer when we unveiled the video boards and the other improvements to Everbank Field, you know, the three words, Jacksonville is great. And here we are, but only we're going to be great if we keep doing great things. So let's be great. And let's see the greatness in downtown Jacksonville. So we have a video. We'll roll that here right now. So.
Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field. Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Jacksonville Sharks, and Jacksonville University. This is Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.